The Summit County Council meets at the county courthouse in Colville tomorrow, starting at about 4:15 in the studio with a preview of the agenda. I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
A public notice to propose designating Silver Creek as a sewer voluntary assessment area. So we're talking about running sewer from where to where?
Well, so to essentially the Woodside homes in the Silver Creek area that already have sewer into the commercial district of Silver Creek. A project that's been on the books, needing to be done for quite a long time. We've got some failing septic systems in that area, and have had for quite a little while. Something we've been working on for the past 2 years to get a voluntary assessment district established. Of course, we needed to get the financing picture for a sewer district together first. Very difficult to do under current state law. Because they do have to be all voluntary. You cannot, even under a public health risk, you can't do an involuntary district. So we've achieved getting the grant from the state, or the loan, the low interest loan from the state, in order to get volunteers to sign up. And we've got 19 businesses that are volunteering to come into the district immediately. And that's enough for us to get this district started.
All right. So, but we're talking about more than $1 million. That's going to be a lot of money if you only got 19 people in it.
It works out to be an assessment per residential equivalent unit, and it depends on how many residential equivalent units your business produces. But turns out to be somewhere in the area of about $1,600 per year per residential equivalent unit in order to join the district and be part of that. And then that will go over a period of time to pay off those bonds that install the sewer.
So when you talk about a residential unit, we're talking, though, about 19 commercial businesses. So how does that translate?
Well, there's and I got it wrong. It's equivalent residential unit, not residential equivalent unit. So there's calculations for that based on, I imagine, square footage of business and what we expect the use to be on that sewer. So
we have 19 out of a potential. How many?
I don't know the potential number, but 19. We knew we needed to get about 15 in order to make it viable to work under the financing that was available to us. So we're above that, and we still expect a few more to come in. They have till, of course, there's a process to set this up. It takes about a month of public notices and hearings in order to get this process in place. That's the start of this tomorrow at the council's meeting. And then by the 4th of January, those that want to be part of the district initially have to have signed their waiver to be part of the district.
All right. So do you have a public hearing scheduled then?
The public hearing is tomorrow. Mm. If I look at the steps, the county council will adopt the resolution designating the voluntary assessment area at the end of that process.
So I'm really surprised to hear that government can't enforce people to change over. I mean, given one of the main reasons for government is the safe, healthy, and welfare of people.
Yeah, there was a kind of an unintended consequence of some of the limits that were put on assessment districts a few years ago by the legislature. Was this difficulty for the health, safety, and welfare cause, specifically for sewer? I mean, in our case, we do have some failing septic systems in neighborhoods in the county that it would be nice to be able to. And the problem with septic systems is they don't all fail at the same time. So, you know, you don't have this this groundswell of support for an assessment district. They kind of trickle in over time. The current state law is that way, and we're looking at our health partners across the state to see what type of support there would be to look at talking to the legislature about some changes to the law.
Yeah. So what about the rest of the neighborhood? Is this going to extend into Silver Creek?
Well, I mean, it would be our hope, looking at some of the water quality studies that we've done in the past. Of course, Silver Creek area is all on septic at this point. As those systems begin to fail, we'd like to have a process in place to extend sewer into the neighborhood where it's viable and make that available. And again, that goes back to what we're allowed to do. Right now, we don't have a good mechanism to do that. We're trying to work with partners around the state in order to see if we can make that easier in the future, not only for that area, but for other areas in the county where we know we're going to experience problems.
Hmm. So talk to me just briefly about the problems. I mean, so the sewage is just seeping into the...
Well, you know, we have several neighborhoods, especially on the west side of the county, that were developed as septic system neighborhoods. And, you know, largely they were neighborhoods where it was projected that they would be second homes for their entire period of time. They've turned into primary homes. And that's where that heavy use over time of a septic system, especially if they're not maintained properly, they fail. There's newer technology that when septic systems are put in, they're better engineered, that allow them to last longer or deal with different types of soils. As we've done water quality studies around, especially the health department over the last few years, we've identified where those places are. We know some of the places where we have some issues, and where neighborhoods have issues, and we're trying to deal with those as we can.
So again, is this stuff seeping then into the groundwater? Is that what's happening?
Well, that's exactly what happens over time. There's different ways to capture that, but the ultimate problem is that it gets into both our lakes and streams, as well as our groundwater.
It's
a concerning issue. That's why we're trying to, you know, deal with it, especially in this area right now where we know we have some issues, and some significant issues. What happens in the interim if we can't deal with those right away? There are places where you can just pump, and we have areas of the county where septic tanks are being pumped on a regular basis so that we don't experience those health problems.
And that's done at the property owner's
That's correct.
Cost. Mm-hmm. Okay. County's not paying for this.
The county's not paying for that, no. That's their responsibility. We, of course, regulate that they have to do that in order to meet health and safety standards.
All right. Moving on, a discussion on the Klein-Dolly parcel, whether or not to move ahead with this, you have to decide on a purchase option by January 20th. Have we finished the due diligence?
Yes. So, in fact, we just got the last little bit of reporting on a well that we were waiting for some ownership information on. So the due diligence, as we see it, is done. Jeff Jones, who's been leading that effort for the county, is going to go through that with the council. And that includes survey information and water rights information and all the really great, exciting stuff that goes with purchasing property. It'll talk a little bit about the buildable area of the property and how, you know, perhaps some of it could be future open space. Some of it could be buildable, that type of thing. So he'll go through that and have a discussion with council, and that's kind of the part of the basic information that the council needs to move forward with a decision. They will also get a report from the folks that went on a trip up to the Northwest to look at some multi-use TOD type projects, transit-oriented design projects, to see what possibilities are out there. To design a project around possibly remote parking, housing, with the idea of relieving traffic issues that we have at our interchanges, relieving air quality issues by reducing cars on the road. I mean, that's kind of the impetus where we're trying to get to with a look at this property.
So you must pass Jeremy Ranch Elementary School to get to this parcel?
It's right in between Jeremy Ranch Elementary and the, I'm not going to remember the name of the commercial area, but where the Park City Brewery is. I guess that's telling about where how I reference
that.
Like
the like
Burt Brothers. Let's say Burt Brothers.
The center, yeah. Something about the center. So that's certainly going to be a concern, no?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as we've seen with other projects that have come forward around our interchanges, each time that we look at another development that happens that adds different types of things to that area. And so the whole idea is to look at ways that we can either partner with different businesses in the area, or look at ways that we can capture the traffic there, get it onto our transit system, and or private shuttles in order to get people in and out in a more efficient way, so that they're not loading up those interchanges all day.
Yeah. Does this property have wet water with it?
It does have wet water with it.
Yeah, how many acre feet do you know?
I do not know the answer to that, but they'll be answering that in the due diligence questions, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the purchase price is $3.7 million, and that would come from where?
Several different sources. Some of it would come from our municipal fund. We're looking at possibly using some of the open space money that's available to us, because part of this property is contiguous to some current open space, and it has the creek bottom to it that would be good open space. We also have some affordable housing money that is available that we could put towards that.
So as part of the due diligence, have you met with the Jeremy Ranch Homeowners Association? And I ask this because there's been a couple of proposals for that parcel.
Yes.
That they came out thick and against.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a neighborhood that is, and I expect the Pinebrook neighborhood to be very active in this as well. You know, they're very interested in what happens in their area, and should be. It does have direct effect on their quality of life. We've met with several different places. We've met with some representatives of the Jeremy Ranch HOA. We've met with the school principal at Jeremy Ranch Elementary, the school district superintendent. We've met with business owners in the area. We've met with affordable housing experts in the area. Along the way, we've wanted to kind of bring some of these people along with our thought process as we develop concepts of what could happen. Some of those same folks have attended the trip with the county staff and council members and planning commission members that went and looked at some of these developments around the country.
Yep. So what are you hearing from them?
Well, I mean, we've heard the gamut of things. You know, there's some folks that are adamantly against anything happening on that property, and I get that. That's a normal reaction. But there's some that look at it and say, well, you know, is there a way to design something that will achieve the goals that we want to achieve, still not detract from the look of the area, and be better for the community? Because there are problems that we need to solve in the community that include development.
Well, I was going to say, you also have law in the books, no new density.
True.
And this is for property that is not vested, and this has got like two units available.
You're absolutely right, but the no new density provisions within the code also come with the proviso of, unless there's significant public benefit that would allow us to talk about density. So, you know, when we talk about traffic mitigation, when we talk about helping our air quality, when we talk about dealing with some of our affordable housing issues, those are possible public benefits that could come with that.
Okay. The University of Utah completed an analysis of options for the site. How many do we have?
Well, they haven't completed it yet. We're about halfway through it. So, not ready to make that public at this point. We're still working with them on that. And so, you know, we're going to probably start to bring that public sometime in the late January, early February timeframe in order to progress that discussion.
That's after the fact that you have to make a decision, though.
That's true, and the timing doesn't line up exactly right with that. But, you know, I think as we saw with the joint meeting between the Park City Council and the County Council last week, They're very centered on the affordable and workforce housing issues, as well as traffic, as we've seen in the past. And I think they see this as an opportunity to do something good.
Okay. The resolution to help out the Boy Scouts with their conduit bond financing, any changes to that? Any problems emerged?
No problems have crept up. This is really a perfunctory step. The county has to pass a resolution this week in order to make the process happen. Really, after that, there is no involvement by the county except to be that conduit.
And then, of course, we've got the budget. Any after the no comment from public last week? You're just going to get approved then?
I don't expect any large controversies about that. I think it will be passed and we'll be ready to move into the new year.
Okay. Anything else, Tom?
Sure. I just want to remind folks that the $36 fee for garbage collection will the bills are going to go out this weekend, so people will be seeing those in their mail. It's taken us a while to get there, but we needed to get the bills out in 2016 to reflect the 2016 revenue for the budget. Also, on Thursday of this week between noon and 3, the county courthouse in Colville will be closed for a staff active shooter exercise.
Okay. Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
The Park City Planning Commission meets on Wednesday starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers. Up first on the regular agenda, discussion of the Treasure Hill Conditional Use Permit. In the studio with details, Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tomorrow's meeting, once again, focusing on Criteria 8, 11, and 15. Criteria 8, looking at the building mass, bulk, and orientation, the location of the buildings on site, including the orientation to buildings on adjoining lots. Since this has already been discussed, do we have some new information here, more to add?
Well, our understanding is that the applicant is going to try and bring the model in so that people can take a look at how the buildings fit into the neighborhood a little bit better and determine some of the context. So we're really getting in the position we're going to start winding this issue down. We've been through the density discussions now. I think the Planning Commission has enough information where they can start to make some determinations. I think we're getting to the same place on height, bulk, and scale. Planning Commission, we're just trying to close out this issue, make sure they have enough information for their deliberations in the future. And then we're going to give a little precursor on the next thing that's coming up, which is we're working on the traffic impact analysis and reviewing the old information. Won't be much of a discussion about it tonight, but I just wanted to tee it up and make sure, and Francisco Astorga is going to tee that one up. Also, our engineering department and sustainability are reviewing the excavation plans and the placement of the fill material. So those discussions are moving forward as well.
Yeah. So this model, have you seen it?
I have not seen it. Francisco Astorga has seen it, and some of the other members of the staff that have been around for a while have seen it. The Planning Commission has seen it. City Council saw it in 2009.
Yeah. The staff report says that the commission needs to review the conditional use permit criteria and consider whether or not the applicant has mitigated the impacts of what you're talking about, the bulk, the orientation, the scale, the design, all of that. Is at what point does that happen?
Okay, so what we're trying to do is make sure we get all the facts on the table, make sure we get all the community input on the table, make sure the applicant has a chance to make their best presentation. At the completion of all of that, then we will start our formal deliberations. But I think in this particular case, the deliberations are so sensitive and so interlocked with all the criteria of the conditional use permit. We just need to make sure we have a clear set of the facts, no misunderstandings, no overinterpretations, and then we can start to deliberate.
Do we have a new timeline then?
No, we're still on about the same timeline here. We predicted this was going to go out about a year. We're about 6 months into it now. So Francisco and his team are moving it forward, and I believe the applicant is moving it forward as well.
So the applicant's design, which we've talked about before, cuts into the mountains so that they can add height. Do we have ideas about how that can be mitigated?
The applicant is claiming that the mitigation is that it's being cut into the hillside and that the buildings have been moved back up the hill so you don't have quite so much height and bulk massing over Main Street. I don't know that the Planning Commission is ready to go that far on that.
So they're saying that is the mitigation.
That is the main mitigation strategy.
And does City Code talk anything about that, about something like that being prohibited?
It's a two-part question. First of all, we're really good about measuring grade, but for the most part, we measure grade from existing grade going up and not going down. However, there are other clauses in the master plan development section and the conditional use permit that says buildings need to step with the topography. And doing a mass excavation like this does not allow the building to step with the topography.
So when we look at the large condominium project there on the north side of Rossi Hill, there was a huge excavation there, you know, just past the roundabout. You know where I'm talking?
Right, right. That's called the roundabout project.
Okay, the roundabout project. Any idea? I mean, is there some comparison? I mean, when we talk about Treasure, how much of a cliffscape are we talking there versus Treasure?
You know, I'd hate to speculate on that, but I think you can see the effect of the cut slopes out at the Winter Sports Park, and they've never really been able to mitigate those. Some members of the public have brought up the cut slopes on Jordanelle Parkway and the road along Deer Creek Reservoir. So, you know, there's some visual examples out there. The staff is not really focused on those right now.
All right. And as you mentioned, staff is recommending that commissioners start familiarizing themselves with the traffic and transportation documents that have been approved. That's going to be first discussion in the new year?
We're going to be starting out on the traffic. I think Francisco is going to bring forward some initial reaction to the compliance with the historic district guidelines coming up first of the year as well.
All right. Because of negotiations that took place a few years ago with members of the city council to try and buy down density or deal with the applicant here to prevent what we're seeing now, what's happened now is that the Planning Commission is basically the final arbiter here, the decision maker on this. So if, in fact, the Planning Commission rules that the project does not meet the criteria for whatever reason, what happens?
Okay, so there's a really good explanation of that on the Treasure website. But in general, what happens is the City Council will appoint a Board of Appeals that can review the Planning Commission decision in lieu of the City Council doing that. The City Council has had to step back and away from this project because they were in negotiations to buy all or portions of it. So they're conflicted. They will establish a new Board of Appeals to just hear this case before any, if it ever goes to the court. So the Planning Commission, Board of Appeals, then they can appeal to the judge.
Yeah. And is the strategy on the applicants, I guess I should talk to them, but I mean, they're just getting through this with what they've got and then waiting for a decision. Is that?
I don't want to speculate for what their strategy is. I will go back to what I said previously. We're trying to make sure all the facts are on the table. There's no misrepresentations or misconceptions about what this project is about.
So we have another 6 months of these meetings,
yep,
looking through each of the different criteria. And at that point, 6 months of deliberation, or do you think it can happen faster than that?
No, this Planning Commission works pretty hard. I think once they get the facts and we structure the discussions for them, they'll move pretty quickly.
Maybe a couple meetings.
Meetings.
All right. I know that you're accepting comments.
Absolutely.
If, in fact, somebody can't be at the meetings.
Absolutely. The best place to put those comments is on the Treasure website. That's on our website at the city.
treasure.comments@parkcity.org.
That's the really good way to do it, because that way they all get distributed to the Planning Commission. They're all in the record going forward. So if there ever is a longer dispute with the Board of Appeals, they'll have all those things on record and all in the right place. Nothing will get lost.
All right. Kimball Garage, a public hearing on a conditional use permit for a 3,800 square foot private event facility. This would be on the second level of a new addition of the current building there. Any concerns from staff about this?
This was in front of the Planning Commission a month or so ago, and the Planning Commission wanted more rigor in our conditions of approval for the use of the outdoor deck portion of the private event facility. This is going to be they've always had events at the Kimball, but it's always been down at street level, and so the neighbors are expressing a lot of concern about a second level special event deck, having a tent up there, noise, light, all of those things. The scale of this deck is larger than most of the decks we've seen, and it's on the second floor. So the applicant has put together some mitigation strategies, because this is a conditional use permit, and the Planning Commission is going to have to weigh them out and listen to the public.
My understanding is that staff's working on some changes and expect to make some recommendations early next year regarding some master plan developments. Would any of those affect what we've got going on here with the Kimball?
Probably not. Probably not.
Okay. And then finally, your decision to not issue a building permit for a building over a pool is being appealed. What's going on here?
Okay, this is up on Mellow Mountain Road, up in the Airy neighborhood. What this really is about is when the plat for this project was approved, the subdivision plat, there was a note on the plat that said the approval was for the building as built and no greater than 14,000 square feet. The applicant has proposed a pool building of about 4,000 additional square feet, not attached to the building, but the pool is attached to the building. And that puts it about 2,000 square feet over the plat note of 14,000 square feet. And so there was no way I could issue a building permit for this because they're 2,000 square feet over it. The applicant has appealed my decision saying that the building over the pool is not part of the house size.
So it's from your perspective, it seems pretty cut and dry. They're going to make the argument that they're not related, then they're not attached?
That's the basis of it. Yeah, the Planning Commission is going to have to weigh in, review the facts, and it's a lot about what the plat note says. From our perspective, we think plat notes are important and probably outweigh a lot of the others. So the Planning Commission is going to have to do their work.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
A couple things. First of all, there is a request by the owner of some of the property over in Deercrest to remove the disconnect on the Deercrest Road between the Keatley side and the Deer Valley side. The two gates would remain in place, but a future development would provoke a complete disconnect of the through road that goes down the canyon. Not the road that goes through Deercrest, and not the road that goes up to St. Regis. This is the road that they use for service vehicles. Planning Commission and the City Council at the time required a disconnect. And so we're just starting this discussion. Our analysis is not complete. This is the opportunity for the applicant to get the information out there and the public to start to weigh in.
Who's the applicant?
Deercrest Associates.
All
and
right.
They'll be represented by their attorney.
Okay, and it's for what project, though, a future project?
This is a project that's in the Deercrest Settlement Agreement called Slalom Village, and it's right at the base of the Deer Valley Lift on that side of the hill, the north side, and I've forgotten the name of it. I've forgotten the name of the lift. I thought it was Mayflower Lift, but I don't have it on the top of my head right now, so that's coming up.
As I recall, the reason we did that was because we didn't want the through traffic, and this would then open that back up? Would it be just for residents of Slalom Village, or would it mean for everyone, anyone?
There's a lot of conditions in terms of the settlement agreement and the agreement with Queen Esther about who can and cannot go through that gate. Right now, there's two gates on the west side and one gate on the east side. They're controlled by the members of the Deercrest HOA and that group up there. We've done a couple of studies about who goes through that gate, how many folks are kind of poaching the gate and sneaking through there. We'll be bringing that forward. It won't be tomorrow night because we're still in the analysis phase. So that's coming up. The Planning Commission tomorrow night is really, really going to have to step up and look at the public good. This is the hardest job they have. This is probably the most complex packet they have. The City Council has kind of handed them a tough job. Hopefully we're coming to kind of a peak in development activity with these really long, complicated projects. I can't predict what the future is, but we seem to be getting all the hard ones.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We'll be checking in with Cole Johnson from the PC Mark. Well, PC Mark offering its free lunchtime learning in the studio to tell us more about that from the Mark. I've got Heather Todd, and then you've got some guests as well who are going to be giving the presentation tomorrow, Heather.
I do. I have Carol Glenn and Becky Wild here with us, and they are going to introduce some unique and different style of cooking using their essential oils.
Okay, so it happens noon to 1?
Noon to 1. We always have our lunchtime learnings the second Wednesday of each month, and we're happy to have them this month.
Okay, so what are you two going to be talking about?
So we're going to be speaking about cooking with essential oils, baking with essential oils for the holiday season. And we've got 5 different items on our menu that we've lined up. One of them is a lemon cookie that we use our lemon oil to bake with. And then Becky has prepared a peppermint bark if she would like to maybe explain a little bit of that.
I'm doing a Christmas bark with white chocolate, dark chocolate, Oreos, and yummy peppermint, and candy canes.
So why would you use, essential oil as opposed to just peppermint extract?
Because it's so much better, and it comes straight from the plant. We use doTERRA, which is certified pure therapeutic grade oils, and they are very potent. You can use one drop of peppermint, and it just goes a really long way, and it's great.
All right, and then why wouldn't you just want to use lemon instead of a lemon oil?
Well, we get 250 drops of lemon in each bottle that we have, and instead of using the actual lemon, where some people might get a feeling of that citrus acid, you don't get that with the lemon oil, and you only need one drop of the lemon oil. The other thing that we're offering is an energy bar for those athletes. It's an organic date, cherry, and a lime oil that we press together with coconut and also chia seed. So we'll be offering that. That's been wrapped in a little bow that offers a great holiday spirit.
Yeah. And there's a lot of debate about essential oils. One thing to diffuse them, another thing, to use them topically. Ingesting, is it really? Is it safe?
It is safe. And each oil on the bottle will indicate if it's not safe for ingesting. So it's very safe to use. They're holistic, like Becky had mentioned. They offer so many different benefits to your body that we don't have time to go into. But if anybody has any questions, we are so happy to answer them.
All right. So you're going to hand out recipes. You're going to talk about how you make them. What's going to happen tomorrow?
We are going to have a recipe for each one of the items that we've made so they can take it with them. And we have a lot of other, things like thyme, rosemary. There's so many different plants that you get essential oils from. So not only are there the Christmas baked goods that we'll have there, but we'll be explaining other ways to cook with them.
All right. So then you'll also have the oils for sale if somebody's interested?
Absolutely. We could set up consultations with whoever's interested. We've got our business cards available that have our phone numbers and our website on there. And we are available 24/7.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
Please come. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. And the beauty of this company is that they do what's called co-impact sourcing. So we're in 40 different countries right now, assisting those natives that live in those countries to have a self-sustaining lifestyle through farming, and they're paid a fair wage for the oils that are provided to doTERRA.
Well, coming up this Thursday, it's Park City Welcome Night. In the studio to tell us more about that is one of the organizers, Megan Wagner. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I mentioned Thursday. When and where then?
Fantastic. So it's Thursday from 4 to 9 p.m. at the Park City Marriott on Sidewinder Drive. It's an open event to the community. It's a great way for people to come and make new friends or talk with local vendors, the Park City Transit, library, various community supporters will be there as well.
Yeah. So how many booths or whatever do you have set up?
We'll have 24 booths and they'll all be full. So it's a big event. There's free food and drink, a cash bar, DJ and dancing.
All right. So why do we do this?
We do this because it's a great way for winter seasonal staff to come together and learn how to best spend their time in Park City. It can be overwhelming whether traveling internationally here or even from across the United States. Not a lot of people know that they can get a temporary library card or that there's a bus that goes down to Salt Lake City if they don't have transportation and want to explore. It's just a great way to meet your local police officers and get a temporary bank account at Wells Fargo. Whatever the situation may be, it's a great way to bring all of those resources together in one room for these seasonal staff to learn.
All right. How many people do you usually get showing up at these?
Anywhere between 500 and 600 throughout the course of the evening.
Yeah. And then how are you getting the word out? Just the different resorts are kind of spreading the word?
Correct. So this year, our sponsors, we work closely with sponsors like Wells Fargo is co-hosting, Westgate, Wyndham, Montage, St. Regis. For those of you listening, I'm sorry if I forget some, but those sponsors will reach out to all of their staff. And then we've also posted flyers as an open community come to the welcome night.
All right. So basically just community services are the folks that are going to be kind of staffing these booths.
Correct. So. Yes. Mm-hmm. So Wells Fargo will have a couple booths, Great Clips, the Park City Library, the Transit System, the Police Station, Switchback Sports for those who want more information about kind of getting snow gear or learning to ski, et cetera. The Christian Center will be there. They will have two booths, one to talk about their services and then one also to talk about volunteer opportunities in the community.
Okay. So it's really an open house format. Just come and go as you please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The vendors will be there all evening from 4 to 9. There'll be pizza in and out and the cash bar is all night as well.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
I think it's just going to be a great event this year and we look forward to seeing everybody.
Okay. Thanks for coming in, Megan.
Of course.